Hello, and welcome to Zombie Jesus Day at Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam is not in on this segment, but I am your host, Becky Friedman, and with me is Bridget. How are you today, Bridget?
I am great, and I am loving this new music. Oh my goodness.
And Wesley, how are you?
Hello, you and all those lovely people out there.
So you've got Zombie Jesus himself on your shirt, although you're a little bit off with your holiday shirts, aren't you?
I do. I even have him on my arm and his mom, too, if we're getting particular about it.
Okay, so that's the permanent zombie Jesus that exists on your body, one painted on your body,
yes,
temple that it is.
But yes, I do have this awesome little t-shirt I got off of T-Fury a while back. You might remember that lovely painting that was done in Spain a couple of years ago. And, you know, she did the painting to the best of her ability, trying to...
I think the painting was actually done many hundreds of years ago, and then the refurbishment happened a few years ago.
Yeah, the restoration project. Oh, my goodness.
So that's how we might actually see one Jesus if he had been stuck in a cave for 3 days, and then, you know, we moved the stone and out he pops. Looking something like that. Besides being Zombie Jesus Day, which many people who are observant do call Easter, how are we?
I'm good.
Any other holidays coming up? Any other maybe secular observances coming up that you're excited for?
Well, there's Earth Day next week and the March for Science.
Indeed.
That I'm really excited about.
Earth Day and March for Science. So it'll take place around the country and the world in just 6 Earth rotations. That's approximately 518,400 seconds.
Oh, my.
So where will you be marching, Bridget?
I will actually probably either be in the Olympia or Tacoma March.
And Wesley, do you have any idea where you might be sciencing and Earth Daying and marching?
I do believe we're going to the Olympia one ourselves.
Cool. Well, we're hoping to see some of our listeners and friends in Olympia because our tireless host and producer, Sam Mulvey, will be speaking at the Olympia Washington March. It'll start around 11 a.m. and wrap up with speakers at Heritage Park at 1 p.m., sort of between 1 and 2. We do have the Tacoma Science March. It's at Tollefson Plaza at 10 a.m. That's followed by the Junior Daffodil Parade, which is always very earth-oriented and community-oriented and so sweet.
It's adorable, and it goes right past our house.
Oh, I love daffodils. They are just like, they're so hopeful and full of spring, and I love them. So, yay, that's exciting.
It is. And then, of course, in Seattle at Cal Anderson Park at 10 a.m., all you got to do is follow the giant orca and the salmon. Now, you've got some familiarity with that giant orca, don't you?
I do, yeah. That orca and the salmon, actually, they were with us at our Free the Snake flotilla last September. That was on the Snake River, which is one of the largest tributaries to the Columbia River that currently has 4 dams blocking the salmon spawning grounds that we need to remove. They are defunct dams. They are doing nothing except blocking salmon. So we were... with those orcas and the salmon, the giant ones that will be at
the Seattle March. Yeah. You can find your march at marchforscience.com, and the theme is science, not silence.
Ooh.
Nice.
So I think that definitely works for us. Very science-oriented, not very silent
at all.
We are, in fact, Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC, you can call and leave a voicemail. It is our voicemail number. It still is our voicemail number. And we still accept and receive calls on that voicemail number. Speaking of silence, can I run by you guys something that I wish were a little bit more silent?
By all means.
Please do.
We've got some best words.
Oh, no.
Yes.
And this is our segment dedicated to none other than Donald Trump. Chocolate cake makes Trump mistake Syria for Iraq. I mean, the power of chocolate cake, seriously.
It must have been a really good chocolate cake.
Donald Trump described how he informed Chinese President Xi Jinping about the U.S.'s strike on Syria in an interview with Fox Business. Trump remarked that the leaders were enjoying the most beautiful piece of chocolate cake that you've ever seen, and then misspoke to reporter Maria Bartiromo when he added that he told the Chinese president about having just fired 59 missiles headed to Iraq. In the same interview, Trump stated no to the question of whether the U.S. will get involved in Syria, but suggested that if he sees Syria using gas, he will respond.
Right, so we're not going to get involved unless we get involved.
Yeah.
Has a chocolate cake ever bowled you over so much that you just forgot what country you bombed?
I believe that happened to Hitler with a German chocolate cake.
Ooh.
I mean, I did have one. It was called a black and blue, and it had gorgonzola cream filling and a dark chocolate, and it was really good. But I never like forgot countries, especially ones that I was.
Were you trying to actively remember countries at that time, though?
Who knows what I was thinking
exactly
at the time?
You forgot countries.
I would really like to liken this to food, not bombs. Just be like chocolate cake, not bombs, not gas, not nothing, not war, from us, from no one. Please, I don't even like chocolate. I mean, you guys know me.
right,
would choose a watermelon over an entire German chocolate cake. Uh-huh. Maybe the gorgonzola thing, because that's just so weird and awesome of flavors that I think
so
I might go for it. But really, is this the time? Is this the time to say, oh, and by the way, I just dropped a few bombs on a country. This is the most beautiful chocolate cake. The way he's describing the chocolate cake is like he is using the chocolate. The beautiful chocolate cake is a euphemism for the beautiful bombs he just dropped.
Right. So for somebody to be so blasé about attacking another country should not have access to our nuclear codes.
And I mean, these bombs, the Moab was used. I mean, that is our largest non-nuclear bomb that we have. It will take out up to a square mile.
Mm-hmm. To be fair, that wasn't Syria.
That
it wasn't
Syria.
Iraq. This was in Afghanistan, close to the border with Pakistan.
But still.
I wonder what inspired him to do that. It mustn't have been a chocolate cake. Maybe a kiwi tart.
Or,
I don't know.
Or a sundae. I'm sure it was a really nice ice cream sundae.
Do you think he was just trying to have like a show of power in front of the Chinese prime minister? Like,
do you show your power by feeding him cake? His remarks, actually, yes.
I mean, he's this. I am so casual about this. I could do this. But think of what I would do if I was actually angry.
If I weren't appeased and
if I was
solved by cake.
Yeah.
But the thing is that we know what he does when he's angry. He tweets at 3 a.m. And it's usually about the most recent Saturday Night Live or
I have yet to see that one, but I'm looking forward to it. Apparently, Melissa McCarthy, a.k.a. Sean Spicer, explains Passover. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Dressed as the Easter Bunny. Yep.
I'm looking forward to that one. But speaking of Sean Spicer, we got some other best words. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer stated in a press briefing that during World War II, Adolf Hitler didn't even sink to using chemical weapons. The remark was in reference to a sarin gas attack on civilians in Syria that the White House attributes to Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. Shocked reporters sought clarification, to which Spicer responded that Hitler did not use gas on his own people the way Assad is doing, and that Hitler did bring people to the Holocaust Center, which many interpreted as a reference to concentration camps and death camps. In an interview with CNN's Wolf Blitzer, Spicer apologized, saying that he mistakenly made an inappropriate and insensitive reference to the Holocaust, for which there is no comparison. There indeed is no comparison, Mr. Spicer, to your blunders.
I'm stunned silence right now. Sorry.
It is beyond comprehension. I mean, I guess, depending on your perspective, because Hitler didn't think of the people put in concentration camps as his own people, maybe that was where Mr. Spicer was getting his confusion from.
It's abominable to gas your own people, but people that you deem as other
that's totally fine.
But
you know,
I mean, not all of those Jews that were in the concentration camps were from other countries. Also, don't forget the people that were mentally handicapped, the gypsies. I mean, the Romani people, I mean, they're German too. You know,
Well, an interesting thing about Germany is that you didn't have birthright citizenship. And also at the time in the 30s, you had citizenship of people that were deemed to be against the state revoked. And that was mostly done by people that were against the state that were Christian Germans. But my grandmother, who was German born, of Jewish heritage, was not a German citizen because there is no birthright citizenship in Germany. There still isn't, just as, you know, in contrast to what we have here in the United States. I'm just looking at this, and my first thought, I think I Facebooked and tweeted it out, was, nice to know that my grandmother's parents and her brother merely resided in Holocaust centers.
Centers.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
they didn't,
like,
you know,
like a museum.
Perish,
you know?
in gas chambers or anything. I'm sure that it does sound like a museum, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Maybe that's his only, you know, interaction with learning about the Holocaust or something. I don't know.
That I can safely say that he probably hasn't learned anything about the Holocaust, except in this last week.
Well,
if even then, goodness.
I'm not so sure. I mean, when you sort of downplay and use these weasel words when it comes to camps where people were killed, they were rounded up to be killed. That's not just a center. That's not just a relocation internment camp. I mean, we have our own ugly, ugly history of Japanese internment along the West Coast here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't death camps. And I have no idea how you could even say merely a Holocaust center.
No.
That's are you mixing it up with Jewish community centers that have been receiving bomb threats over the past 2 months? Like, this is not what's going on, Mr. Spicer.
No.
And when you use these weasel words, it's a way to really sort of downplay the horror of what's going on. And this is something that is very concerning to secularists, very concerning to Jewish groups, very concerning to a lot of people that are looking at the infiltration of sort of this white nationalist kind of movement within the current administration. When you use those weasel words, it's a way to distance yourself from the fact that the Holocaust was a horror.
That's true. Yeah. It, as much as I would love to be able to say, oh, he's just an idiot. No, there's definitely intention behind what he said. And it is inexcusable.
I got a question. Do you think there's really intention, or do you think that Sean Spicer is swimming around through so much of this baloney that he's kind of internalized the rhetoric around him within the administration and those Steve Bannon advisors?
He is part of the rhetoric, though. I mean, he is part of what's going on, what's being put into the president's ear, what's getting put into his own ear. I mean, It's just a blender of horrible ideas, and you know, everybody's regurgitating these on different talk shows or in front of the press like that,
or in front of atheist microphones. No, but so am I giving him too much credit for maybe just saying that he's a victim of sort of brainwashing?
Yeah,
he's not a victim.
No, when you sign on to be the mouthpiece for a president like the one we're currently enduring, then you know what you're doing. You know what you're getting yourself into.
So Easter.
Easter.
Yay.
What's the craziest, wackiest thing that you guys ever grew up with regarding Easter? Because I grew up Jewish and I didn't really have Easter. I didn't even really understand that people hid eggs. I thought you were just supposed to go around and collect them.
not that many people have chickens anymore to just like have everybody collect their eggs.
Were you guys ever told some funny stories besides the whole fact of like a dude died and was stuck in a cave and then came back to life 3 days later?
That was pretty much the focus that my family had, which was crazy enough as it is.
Well, I don't think we had any really weird stories around it, but I will tell everybody that does like to color eggs, which I am one, like dye all your eggs like solid colors and they're all pretty and all that. Then go back and put a tablespoon of vegetable oil into each glass and then re-dye your eggs and make them speckled. And just make sure that you dry them off really well between colors.
Yeah.
Easter is an arts and crafts day.
Totally. I mean, yeah.
It's a treasure hunt day.
Absolutely.
It's a gorge yourself on chocolate and jelly beans day, right?
Absolutely. That's the best part. And my grandmother always made the Yorkshire pudding and she would always like forget it. So it was always like a little crunchy on the bottom. Mm. And I didn't know that wasn't how it was supposed to be until I was an adult.
Nice.
Well, we do have some feedback from a listener. This is Courtney, who writes to us from Facebook. And she says, the weirdest thing that I was told about Easter was that dogwood trees only grow so tall because it was the wood used for the cross Jesus died on. After he was crucified, the trees wouldn't grow any bigger, so they couldn't be used for crucifixions. Lol. So, Courtney, this is really interesting. Do we have some budding botanists in your family? Did you kind of like call them on that? Are dogwoods even present in the Middle East?
That I don't even know, but that's a good question.
It's like the state tree and state flower of like four different states in the sort of eastern southern Atlantic here. So
yeah, not exactly the same climate that you would have in the Middle East.
I think that the crucifixions that were happening right around the Roman time must have been happening through cedar and cypress wood.
I just really imagine that Jesus was really short. I mean, like really short.
Well, so, do you have a really stumpy dogwood tree in your front yard?
Yeah, you know, you work with what you have. And so, dogwood tree, yeah.
So, do you guys like going and buying any of that discount chocolate tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. That's the best part of any of these holidays. Like
the little Reese's peanut butter eggs. Oh.
You know, I'm not a big fan of the Reese's peanut butter cups, but in egg form, it's miraculous. That's my Easter miracle.
Chocolate is different.
It's different and tastes better.
And I will definitely eat a bunny or two.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to eat the rabbit?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The chocolate bunny. You got to eat the chocolate bunny.
Oh, the chocolate bunny. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I get it.
Well, you know, if it was cooked well, I'd eat a rabbit too.
No, I let's not get into that. Childhood trauma. Oh, goodness.
Childhood trauma here too with rabbits. Yeah.
Yes. But question for you, do you eat on the chocolate bunny, do you eat the ears first or the tail first?
I eat the eyes first.
Face first.
I pick off the little candy eyes and eat those first. And then I go for the ears and straight down.
Yeah, see,
I blind my rabbit first.
we just
can't stare at you accusingly.
We just get left with the Passover Seder. You know what the middle matzah is called? You just experienced your first Seder for the first time.
I did.
That middle matzah is called the afikomen, which you learned means?
Dessert?
Yes.
Yes.
Yay. So we get a dry piece of we get a dry piece of cardboard for our dessert, and you guys get all this fun chocolate. Well, this is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic. When we come back, we'll be talking about maybe some music, maybe some really interesting things about some judges in the LDS church. We'll travel to India and we'll hear some much better words.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with me, Becky Friedman. Today, we are without Sam for these segments, but we got Bridget in the studio, and we've got me in the studio, and we're also in a little bit welcoming Lawrence to the studio. But before we do that, I would really like to thank two contributors to Peggy's Challenge. We've got Paul from Ashford, Washington, and Jesse from Philadelphia, who writes The Watershed Song by Shelley Siegel and Dan is now one of my favorites. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep the lights on. You can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button, it goes right to our PayPal account, and it helps with studio production, it goes to show production, everything helps out. So, Bridget, you must be beaming at that last one, the Watershed Song.
It is so exciting to see that there are people besides me who love his work. And of course, Shelley's work too. But I mean, I know everybody loves Shelley. But for somebody to appreciate the natural aspect of the Watershed Song is like, it's just really exciting. Thank you, Jesse.
Sam also has a Patreon. Sam releases some interesting things on his Patreon page, and that's patreon.com/Sam Mulvey. And so those are two ways that you can help support the things that you hear and the people that make it possible. You know, we talked about some best words. We talked about some zombie Jesus. Bridget, you ready to go into something a little bit heavier than that?
Sure, let's go.
Okay. An atheist man from the southern India state of Kerala hanged himself from his home staircase after meticulously preparing for his own death for at least 3 years. Joseph Connor left Christianity after confronting the church over its use of tithed money and eventually became an atheist. Connor had dug his own grave in his courtyard 3 years ago, knowing that he did not wish to be buried in a religious fashion, nor would his body be welcome. The day before his suicide, he hired a worker to clean the grave and invited his friends and family to visit. Connor left a suicide note claiming sole responsibility for his death, saying the pain is insufferable, hence, I am going. Bury my body as per my wish. He left his relatives money for burial expenses, and his family reportedly interred Connor without religious ceremony save for a copy of his own memoir, The Way of Truth, which was placed with his body in the grave. Bridget, what do you make of this?
So, it makes a lot of sense to me, as a person who most of my family is religious. If I were ever found in a place where I was, if I knew that I was sick, it looks like this gentleman was elderly and he was in a lot of pain. If I were in a situation similar to that, and I wanted to ensure that my funeral and my burial was not religious, that is exactly how I would do it. Is like, I would just make all of the preparations myself and set it up to go on the day that I wanted to go. And I think that this is an admirable way to prepare yourself so that you're taking all of the pressure off of your family and loved ones, and it also ensuring that you get what you want.
You know, I looked up the Kerala state, and it's right at the tip of India, and it looked really clear cut in terms of its demographics, where you have about 50% are Hindu. A quarter of the folks there are Muslim and a quarter of the folks are Christian. There was like 0.32% of something other than Christian, Muslim, or Hindu. And I imagine in that kind of environment, it would be really difficult to, upon your death as an avowed atheist who took up, you know, words against the church, to be able to find a place where your body could then be treated after its death.
Yeah. I also find it admirable that he's like, nah, you're all too greedy. I want nothing to do with you. I'm out of here. Like that's so, I don't know. He's sort of my hero right now. And I would love to get my hands on a copy of his memoir, actually.
So the Way of the Truth is what the title translates to in English. And I don't have the name of it in his language. I don't actually even have the language that's native to that particular area of India, but apparently was sort of a philosophy or a treatise on his understanding of rationality. And I think that it's a very interesting thing to be able to say, hey, this, I don't want to be buried with a Bible. I don't want to be buried with a Quran. The only thing I want no religious fanfare, but my own book. Yeah. That's my own story and my own way of taking agency within my life.
I hope it's not the only copy. I hope that it's like a published work that somebody can go out there and find and send to us here. Because I think that would be amazing.
That would definitely be amazing. So I think as we talk more about a lot of our states and different countries that have something like death with dignity laws, which is a way to control your own death and your own life, there's something that's really powerful in that. For someone who's non-religious, I'm not at that place where I would be approaching the end of my life where I would have age-related painful ailments. But I really appreciate from the humanist side of myself saying, you know, he has agency in his own life and his own death, and he's also thinking about himself and his family in his own death. I mean, to say I want someone to clean up the grave and to make sure that guy's paid and, you know, appropriately. Mm-hmm. He had a stepping stone that he used to hang himself. And he had a mason come and, like, place the stone in, like, all the right place. Like, it looks like he took care of everything.
Everything. Yeah.
And I'm sorry that at the age of 70, he felt that the pain was too much for age-related ailments and couldn't go on. Because I think that in a lot of places in the world, when you're 70, you're still looking at another 30 years of wonderful, fulfilling, enriching life. And he only started being an atheist 5 years ago when he took up issue with the priests that seemed to be taking their
well,
money.
It's sort of amazing to think about, like, in the secular world, like, bodily autonomy is so important. And for him to utilize that one, like, last thing, whereas in Christianity, killing yourself is an ultimate sin that you can't be forgiven for. This was sort of his last hurrah as an atheist. So I thought that was pretty great.
I think so, too. I'd like to now introduce someone that also stems his life and lives his life from the humanistic and secular standpoint, that non-religious standpoint. And we have Lawrence Genova in the studio with us. How are you today, Lawrence?
I'm good.
Lawrence is a humanist musician. He is a parent living in the South Puget Sound. It's so wonderful to have you in the studio with us today.
Thank you.
So when we first met, you told me about your atheist music. What makes your music specifically atheist?
I guess it's the songs that I've written. I'd written an atheist song back in before 2008, probably about 2007, and it was kind of a one-off song. And then that was while I was in the military. And when I got out of the military, I wanted to do the music thing, singer-songwriter thing. You know, played at a bunch of bars. You know, did the whole gigging thing. And after a while, I just kind of just lost a taste for just doing it. You know, it wasn't really motivating for me at that time. But then, and you know, in parallel to that, I've always had atheist views. I've always looked at people problems and worldly problems and wondered why we can't solve them without religion. And I started to write about that, and I started to write music about that, and I realized, like, wow, that. That's my thing. That's what I want to do. I want to write atheist and humanist music, and, you know, music with secular views, just to get people to start thinking about, you know, what they can do.
So you started a Facebook group called Atheist Music Collaboration. Can you tell us more about that?
So I started that because as a singer-songwriter who writes atheist stuff, I realized it's hard to find like-minded musicians, you know, in your area, and I know there, and I know I'm not the only one out there. You know, I realize there's, you know, people like Washington is great. I moved to Washington just last year, and realized there and found that there's a huge atheist community out here, huge humanist community. So that's good. But then there are a lot of atheists that are stuck in, like, the Bible Belt who want to play music, who write, you know, atheist-related songs. And they said, can't find like-minded musicians to play with them. So I started the Atheist Music Collaboration Group as a way to connect atheist musicians from around the country. And right now we're at probably about over 350 members, just atheist musicians just from around the country, you know, doing their thing. It's not specific to genre either. You know, there's rock, metal, rap, you know, R&B, you know, they're all there.
If you're a musician and you may not have specifically atheistic music, would your Facebook group also contribute to that? Like, would that be promoted too, or is it only for the atheist themed music?
Oh, no. It's not strictly atheist themed music, because like I said, I was a singer songwriter. I didn't start out by writing about atheist stuff. I started out by just writing about life experiences and love and just traveling. And I always encourage people in the group to share their music. It doesn't have to be about God or anti-God or whatever. It's just whatever they got, and fortunately that's what they've been doing. And what's good too is I always encourage people in the group to try to connect with other musicians in their area. You know, put out what they need. Like, hey, I'm a drummer. I'm looking to jam out with a guitarist. You know, to work on some, let's say, rockabilly stuff or metal stuff. And you just put it out there, and then you'll get some responses. So.
So is this an open group, or is this a by invite only?
It is open. You can see all the posts. You can see all the music that's shared. And if you can request to join. I do vet the people that join. I do make sure that.
Ooh, have you ever had any infiltrators?
Oh yeah, ton of them. I mean, right now I want to say, like I said, about 350 people. Maybe a quarter of the people that try to join the group are not atheists, and I can tell are there to try to, be trolls. And some of them make it through. Some of them make it through. And there was this one time, this guy made it through. He posted a song, and I listened to it, and it was clearly a religious song. So I cut him out of the group just right off the bat. And I put on a post. I said, just so you know, like when I asked you to share your music, I am really listening to it. Like, I'm actually listening to the lyrics. And so every once in a great while, some religious person would throw his music on there and try to push his stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this is not that group. Feel free to join other groups. I always tell them that. I'm not saying that I don't think that, Christian music or religious music has a voice. I'm just saying they have a voice in other groups, just not this group.
I like that, and as Sam and the rest of the co-creators of Ask an Atheist were first getting started so many years ago, really saying, hey, why don't we have Christian people, or why don't we have theists on Ask an Atheist to debate? Well, there's plenty of media venues for folks with those religious beliefs to get their beliefs out there. But this is a space for an atheistic or a humanistic voice to be heard. So I feel
yeah,
you there.
No, I tell them that too. That it's not a debate group. It's to share music, share your music, share your secular music, But amongst atheists and humanists.
So we're gonna hear in a little bit some of your music that you have created. But I want to shift for a moment, because you also administrate another Facebook group called Atheism, Science, and Compassion. And that links to a webpage called hominism.org. And I really was very interested in this, because I wanted to know how your philosophy of hominism, I'm assuming this from, hominid or hominins, sort of the great apes that we are. How does that differ from what's typically understood as secular humanism?
Okay. Well, I'm going to say it differs. Well, first of all, let's talk about the group, the Atheism, Science, and Collaboration. So I created that group because I am a part of a lot of atheist debate groups and pages. And, I started to realize and see that there was a lot of hate going around both ways, trolls on both sides of the debate. And for me, although I'm atheist, I think the focus should be moved away from does God exist to, hey, look at all the cool science stuff that we do now. You know what I'm saying? It's like debating with someone on why the world is round. Like, why are we wasting time with this debate? Let's move on to, hey, there's other round planets out there. So that's my whole thing. And the hominism thing is basically kind of my own philosophy on how I think of humanity or human being. Seven aspects of hominism. There's the first level, it's kind of the basic, the primitive level. What all living things have in common. Every living thing needs energy. Everything, every living thing needs to reproduce. Every living thing has a way to regulate, whether it's, you know, whether it's just like a cell membrane or it's a human being who can defend himself and, you know, and fight. So those are the three things. And then the next level, reason, intuition, and connection. So that's basically what makes us human. You know, we have the ability to reason, but then we also have intuition, which also involves our, you know, our physiological and biological reactions to things, you know, our,
I'm hearing some little echoes of philosopher Daniel Dennett in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do read a lot of that stuff. Matter of fact, I'm on Sam Harris's book right now. But so that, and then connection, and that, you know, another thing that makes us human is that our connection with each other, with other human beings and other living things. And then the final aspect of what makes us human, and I think what probably sets us apart even from other animals, other creatures in the world, is transcendence. You know, our ability to feel like we're transcending, or feel out of body, or feel one with each other. You know, the
that's a very interesting thing for an atheist to sort of hook onto.
Well, see, mm-hmm. And see, that's the thing, because, you know, obviously religious people gain that through religion. You can gain that through meditation. You can gain that through nature. You can gain that on LSD. You know,
or through listening to a particular piece of music.
Exactly.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like when you want to talk about it biologically, I mean, really, you're just spiking your serotonin. But at the same time, it's still something worth looking into. And like I said, there have been studies on it. So it's a very essential part of what makes us human.
Were you raised in a particular religion, or were you more secular?
No. So I grew up. Not in a religious household. I mean, my mom, you know, she said she was Catholic, and, you know, she always told me to pray to God and stuff, but she never pushed it, you know. Actually, it wasn't until, like, I got into, it was about middle school where I actually started to go to church on my own with friends of mine, you know, born-again church. I was actually born-again at the time, a born-again Christian. So I did believe, I was religious, did all that whole thing. But then what actually got me down an atheist path wasn't so much the you know, science and rational thought, or even a contempt for religion. It was actually because I started to think more about love. You know, keep in mind, I am a singer-songwriter, so I write songs about love. Every songwriter, you know, writes about love, and every songwriter thinks about you know, philosophical and emotional topics deeply. And you know, and I think about that, and I think about how, you know, at the time I'm Christian, although I love God, if he had asked me to sacrifice my brothers at the time, this is before I became a parent, if he asked me to sacrifice my brothers, I would never do it. And I know he does that kind of thing, first off. And I'm like, I would actually not do that. I would rather suffer, you know, eternally than to ever sacrifice my own family. And then I kind of went from there. It was like, maybe I prioritize my family over my God. And then maybe love itself is independent from God. And then, so like I said, it snowballed from there. It was like, well, maybe God doesn't even exist in the first place.
Nice. An interesting path that I think some folks can relate to, when you sort of feel that cognitive dissonance.
Definitely. But you mentioned that you now have children. Are you teaching your child about any sort of religious aspects, or is it more humanist?
Yeah. So I remember the first time it came up, she's 10 now, but the first time it came up was a couple years ago. And I remember one day she said to me, hey, Dad, you know, like, I just out of nowhere, it's like, I believe in God. I'm like, whoa. You know, it's just like, who told you this, you know? But I said, you know what? I just want, you know, I'm going to let you believe whatever you want to believe, but understand that there are other things out there. So I started to show her stuff about evolution, and she was fascinated by it. She thought it was the coolest thing. So ever since then, she was good to go. I told her, just believe whatever you want to believe, but just keep an open mind about a lot of things. And that's what she's done. But then, I want to say last year, she was sitting at her table in class. There was like three other students around, and they were just talking, doing whatever school stuff they were working on. And she, it happened to come up, where she told the kids that, hey, I don't believe in God. And then they started to make fun of her for it.
Oh.
They said, you're going to hell. I cannot believe that you don't believe in God. You are totally going to hell. And they were just making fun of her. But she stood her ground. And then she told me this story after school. I asked her, what was your teacher? And they had a substitute at the time.
Mm.
So I wrote her teacher an email. I said, this was nothing but bullying is what it was. You know, they could have been talking about any topic that they were bullying. And so, well, what was good was that the next day the teacher had to talk with the class. You know, the kids were in trouble and stuff. But what was interesting was she came, when she told me that story, she said, I hate people that believe in God.
Hmm.
And I was like, okay. what I want you to understand that is that, you know, whether you believe in religion or not, that's not a reflection of your character, you know? And, you know, I kind of had to teach her that you don't want to be like them. You know, they, you know, Christian people think they're virtuous. You can be virtuous without being religious, you know? And one of those things that you need to do is understand that, you know, there are a lot of good people that are religious and a lot of good people that aren't religious. And you don't need to hate just because they believe in God, you know?
I think that's a really valuable lesson. I think it's really bold of a little girl to be able to say, I don't believe in God.
She's a very outspoken extrovert. That's why she's able to stand her ground with those kids. So I'm definitely not worried about her.
Any music collaboration with the kiddo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? All right.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
I'm really interested in what your opinions are in terms of how you see the future of non-religious people in our political climate. And I know you've got something personally exciting on the forefront.
Okay. So, you know, there's this quote by John F. Kennedy where he said, as we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter words, but to live by them. It was actually from a Thanksgiving Day proclamation in which Kennedy was giving thanks to the founders of this country and saying that we should show our appreciation by emulating the virtues that our founders had that made it all possible. But when I think of that quote, I think in terms of the activists and the politicians who protested and advocated for equal rights, for workers' rights, education, healthcare, and protecting the environment. I think about the people that fought for all those things in the past and the people who are currently fighting for those things right now. I'm grateful for all of them, and it's inspired me to want to help. It made me want to get back to serving my country just like I did when I joined the Air Force after 9/11. But this time, I want to serve as an elected official. And for me, it starts with my community. You know, sure, I go to the town halls in Seattle and Tacoma, and next week I'm going to be marching for science, just like you guys.
Nice.
Trying to figure out where. But when I go home from, you know, away from all the activism stuff, I still want to continue supporting the people around me. And this is why I'm announcing that I've decided to run for DuPont City Council. You know, this is going to be the first time I've ran for anything, so it's all new to me. And I know there's going to be a lot of work involved with no guarantee of success. But I do hope to inspire other atheists and humanists to run for office or at least be more involved with politics at a local level. I know many atheists have a disdain for politics and barely even want to talk politics. But when you have legislators that want to turn churches into super PACs,
mm-hmm.
that want to legalize discrimination based on religious beliefs, or use Bible verses to justify taking away unemployment benefits, then now is more important than ever to not be passive about politics. It's more important than ever to not just have just a discussion about politics. And even if you are religious, we can all agree that this administration seeks to remove federal government regulations on education, the environment, and the economy. And you know what? Some people prefer that, and some people don't. But either way, it's more incumbent on us to take action at local levels and at state levels, whether it's through activism or through our legislators. You know, we need to act now and we need to all do it together. And hopefully, in the future, people will look back on us and see that we fought for them, we fought for their families, we fought for their friends, and we fought for their children, and we did it because we fought for humanity.
Lawrence, thank you so much for joining us for this. We're excited to hear some of that music that you've got going and coming up for us. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic, and stay tuned for some awesome music from our budding politician, our parent, our singer-songwriter, Lawrence Genova.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. We've been so privileged to be talking with Lawrence, and now we're going to hear a little bit of his music. Lawrence, what are you playing for us first?
So I'm going to start you off with To All the People. You can find this on my website and or on my Facebook page, facebook.com/Lawrence Genova. You will find the not the acoustic version, but the produced version. This is going to be the only place where you're going to hear the acoustic version of that song. Here it goes. To all the people that I know, to all of those that I love and I care for, to all the differences that make us who we are, to old friends that I used to be there for, to new friends that I still should get to know, to the connections in the world that I keep, through conversations that we have over the phone, or with updates that we read in news feeds. Here's another one that which I'm hoping you read. I'm on a new mission and I'm going full speed to be the voice of reason despite all the many grievances and battles being fought. Not for people, but beliefs. I mean, you got folks over here who will fight for a cause against the ones who want rights so they read the same book. And you got folks over there who kill for a cause which is worth more to them than any life they ever took. But there are better ways we could be using up this energy if we made decisions based on logic, facts, and empathy, and not an entity we made up in our minds and never see, preventing us from seeing our actual identity. With every waking day before my life is gone, I want to help erase all the lines we've drawn. Now I may be solo, but I still got hope though that it won't always be that way. Comes a time in our lives when we have to decide, do we love with all our hearts or let it all just fall apart? Next time you fly up in the sky, make sure to get a window seat. And as the plane takes off and climbs up over 30,000 feet, keep your eyes locked to the ground and watch as all the buildings shrink. All the cars will look like toys, and all of this should make you think with what humanity has done and all the things we can create. Why do we spend all our time only on things that we debate? Why do we waste our time fighting the things we choose to hate? There's a limit, that which people will impose upon themselves in service to their God, to their prophet, to religion, to their faith, to their country, to their culture, to tradition, to their race. Not much room for much else but maybe their family, and one thing that's hardly there is service to humanity. There is no next life, there's only this one. That's how I live and why I want to get this done. This is my mission. I hope you are listening to everything I got to say. Comes a time in our lives when we have to decide, do ooh. to all the people that are dying in the streets, to all the people that are fighting just to live. While our leaders will let history repeat, religious folks will have no tolerance to give. To all the children that get caught in between, the many battles in a never-ending war, within their lifetime they may never see peace, even if it were to wash up on the shore. To all the people that just wanna feel safe, to feel safe when they are around cops, they don't wanna be reminded of their race when they get pulled over during a traffic stop. To all the people that just wanna show love, but someone else's God is standing in the way. To all the people that when they look above, they don't see heaven cause they wanna see space. Comes a time in our lives when we have to decide, do we love with our hearts or let it all just fall apart?
Thank you so much. What inspired this song?
Well, it's pretty much, I guess you could say, my manifesto for what I wanted to do with my music. The message that I wanted to spread were basically, you don't need to be good, you don't need to be happy, and you don't need to love with religion. That's religion and God is not required for those things, especially being happy and being good to other people.
That climactic moment about looking up into the sky and seeing not heaven but space, yeah. Sort of that majesty that both someone who's looking for heaven and someone who's looking for something beyond this world can mm-hmm. feel that transcendence as you were referring to earlier today. Yeah. I love it. You got something else for us?
Yeah, let me do this is an old one. This next one's called The Underestimated One. It's actually, I wrote it at the time when I was doing the singer-songwriter thing, but open mics and stuff. And then, you know, feeling underestimated for, you know, what I brought to the table. There's a lot of, I guess, even though I applied it to music, I mean, it's applicable to a lot of things, so. My mind is free, my heart is gold, my body traps me, my life is old. They keep me here under the sea of superficial tendencies. Still I sneak away when no to stay in my place, though they won't tell me to my face. The distant star, brighter than the sun, the underestimated one. Who will sneak away when the
loving. Yeah, I will do the things that everyone thinks I can only dream.
Thanks, Lawrence. You know, you say that that started out being about music and about being underestimated in terms of your musicianship, perhaps, or when you're really trying to find that footing at those open mics. But I can see how that would apply to so many different situations, especially in the context of being someone who is a non-believer. Yeah. In the context of, well, you couldn't possibly have morals since you don't believe in God. And
right.
You underestimate someone
yeah.
when you think that way.
Even I like you know, the line. I was trying to think of things that get underestimated, and one of them is the sun, and then the other one is the wind that's blocked but carries on. The underestimated one. You think and you feel a breeze and you think nothing of it, but it can be very powerful. You know. So
I think you've got one more for us.
Yeah. So the devil all along. That's actually the first, I guess, atheist song I wrote when I didn't even know it at the time. I just wanted to write about the topic. You know, the song Imagine from John Lennon, you know, huge track that a lot of people would consider, being an atheist anthem. Basically, The Devil All Along is a part two, it's a sequel to Imagine, where John Lennon is talking about imagine no religion. The Devil All Along is a story of a father in the future telling his kid about how religion came to an end.
Lawrence, it's been a real treat having you with us today in the studio. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Bridget and to Wesley. Our regular theme music is by Phil Whitfield and Chris Coleman, as usual. This episode is co-produced by me, Becky Friedman, and Sam Mulvey. Give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC. Send us an email at questions@askanatheist.tv. Tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. And we will see you at the March for Science next Saturday, April 22nd.